Welcome to National Liberty's weekly call. Today is Monday, December 23rd, 2024. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening over Rumble or YouTube or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If you would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of a website of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up with our scripture reading where we left off last week. We're in the Gospel of John, and we're chapter 7, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 7. After these things, Jesus walked in Galilee, for he would not walk in Jewry, because the Jews sought to kill him. Now the Jews' feast of tabernacles was at hand. His brethren therefore said unto him, Depart hence and go into Judea, that thy disciples also may see the works that thou doest. For there is no man that doeth anything in secret, and he himself seeketh to be known openly. If thou do these things, show thyself to the world. For neither did his brethren believe in him. Then Jesus said unto them, My time is not yet come, but your time is alway ready. The world cannot hate you, but me it hateth, because I testify of it that the works thereof are evil. Go ye up unto this feast. I go not up yet unto this feast, for my time is not yet full come. When he had said these words unto them, he abode still in Galilee. But when his brethren were gone up, then went he also up unto the feast, not openly, but as it were in secret. Then the Jews sought him at the feast, and said, Where is he? And there was much murmuring among the people concerning him, for some said, He is a good man. Others said, Nay, but he deceiveth the people. Howbeit no man spake openly of him, for fear of the Jews. Now about the midst of the feast, Jesus went up into the temple and taught. And the Jews marveled, saying, How knoweth this man letters, having never learned? Jesus answered them and said, My doctrine is not mine, but his that sent me. If any man will do his will, he shall know of the doctrine, whether it be of God, or whether I speak of myself. He that speaketh of himself seeketh his own glory, but he that seeketh his glory that sent him, the same is true, and no unrighteousness is in him. Did not Moses give you the law? And yet none of you keepeth the law. Why go ye about to kill me? The people answered and said, Thou hast a devil. Who goeth about to kill thee? Jesus answered and said unto them, I have done one work, and ye all marvel. Moses therefore gave unto you circumcision, not because it is of Moses, but of the fathers. And ye on the Sabbath day circumcise a man. If a man on the Sabbath day receive circumcision, that the law of Moses should not be broken, are ye angry at me because I have made a man every whit whole on the Sabbath day? Judge not according to the appearance, but judge righteous judgment. Then said some of them of Jerusalem, Is not this he whom they seek to kill? But lo, he speaketh boldly, and they say nothing unto him. Do the rulers know indeed that this is the very Christ? Howbeit we know this man whence he is. But when Christ cometh, no man knoweth whence he is. Then cried Jesus in the temple as he taught, saying, Ye both know me, and ye know whence I am. And I am not come of myself, but he that sent me is true, whom ye know not. But I know him, for I am from him, and he hath sent me. Then they sought to take him, but no man laid hands on him, because his hour was not yet come. And many of the people believed on him, and said, When Christ cometh, will he do more miracles than these which this man hath done? The Pharisees heard that the people murmured such things concerning him, and the Pharisees and the chief priests sent officers to take him. Then said Jesus unto them, Yet a little while am I with you, and then I go unto him that sent me. Ye shall seek me, and shall not find me. And where I am, thither ye cannot come. Then said the Jews among themselves, Whither will he go that we shall not find him? Will he go unto the dispersed among the Gentiles and teach the Gentiles? What manner of saying is this, that he said, Ye shall seek me and shall not find me, and where I am, thither ye cannot come? In the last day, that great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried, saying, If any man thirst, let him come unto me and drink. He that believeth on me, as the Scripture hath said, out of his belly shall flow rivers of living water. But this spake he of the Spirit, which they that believe on him should receive. For the Holy Ghost was not yet given, because that Jesus was not yet glorified. Many of the people, therefore, when they heard this saying, said, Of a truth, this is the prophet. Others said, This is the Christ. But some said, Shall Christ come out of Galilee? Hath not the Scripture said, That Christ cometh of the seed of David, and out of the town of Bethlehem, where David was? So there was a division among the people because of him. And some of them would have taken him, but no man laid hands on him. Then came the officers to the chief priests and Pharisees, and they said unto them, Why have ye not brought him? The officers answered, Never man spake like this man. Then answered them the Pharisees, Are ye also deceived? Have any of the rulers or of the Pharisees believed on him? But this people, who knoweth not the law, are cursed. Nicodemus saith unto them, He that came to Jesus by night, being one of them, Doth our Lord judge any man before it hear him, and know what he doeth? They answered and said unto him, Art thou also of Galilee? Search and look, for out of Galilee ariseth no prophet. And every man went unto his own house.
Okay, Jen, do we have any questions tonight or any announcements?
We have two questions tonight, John. The first question, I don't think we have talked much about. It's my understanding that this smart meter epidemic is nationwide. All the states are trying to get them installed. They're a method for having control of your power. And apparently the state of Pennsylvania is the only one in the country that makes it mandatory. The rest of them you can opt out or opt in as you please. So some of the people here in Pennsylvania have been fighting the Public Utility Commission order that smart meters are mandatory. And, you know, that affects every Pennsylvanian who uses electric provider's power. It gives them total ability to control your energy usage if they choose. And I'm sure in the future they will delight in doing that. Now, one of our members filed a case against the Public Utility Commission at C-2021-3026268, and it was rejected. Now, is there anything that NLA can do to get this mandatory ruling suspended, deleted, or changed to allow the decision to be made by the consumer rather than the power company as to whether they want a smart meter or just a normal power meter? I know since I had mine installed, which I didn't fight it, I just let them stick it on the wall, but my electric bill is probably 60% higher than it used to be. Gradually gone up, you know, it's like they have a staircase rate increase that you can say was justified by usage. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. You think there's anything we can do to help those people, John?
Well, it sounds like it's pretty much in Pennsylvania. I know it's grown everywhere, but in Pennsylvania it appears to be that they have to do it. There's no choice. I guess that's pretty much what's being said. But is that true? It's only in Pennsylvania that it's required? Do you know that?
Yeah. Well, the Public Utility Commission made a rule. They mandated it.
And that was in Pennsylvania?
Yes. Do they have the authority to do that? Can they do that?
Well, no, they can't. I don't think they can. You know, first of all, we got to remember that we are coming to a change of power. And there's a lot of great things are going to happen, and I think these are one of the problems that will be dealt with at some point. I do believe that we could beat this in court. And maybe it's something we would take up in the near future, you know, after we get somewhat into 2025 and see how things come along. You know, we've been communicating with a lot of people in Congress and the Senate, and also the President and many other individuals through letters that we've been sending. We copied, of course, all of our paperwork. We had mentioned that last week and maybe the week before, concerning a presentment with an order right here to the United States Supreme Court. And they have not sent it back. And that's one for the record, because every time we've sent papers to the United States Supreme Court, they've sent them back, but not this one. And it's a presentment with an order. It's pretty powerful. If anybody hasn't read it, you should read it. We also sent a letter to two doorkeepers that did reject it on a different level. And we sent an addendum to the grand jury, to the grand jury presentment. We also sent numerous other papers, which I haven't posted yet. I'll try to get that up this week, which is really educational papers, but not necessarily going to the Supreme Court, but to these individuals that are coming in to take power. You know, we have a lot of potential coming up, so we'll see how it goes. But yeah, I think, you know, again, I think we need to kind of sit in there and wait for this. The most important thing that NLA is working on at the moment is, of course, educating certain individuals that are coming into power to bring them to an understanding of the common law, because I don't think any or many of them understand it at all. But hopefully our papers are going to wake them up, and they do have these papers now, all of these individuals. And we plan on taking a really good focus dealing with the judges on the federal level with the paper that we filed. We're going to see where that goes, but we do, you know, the judges on the federal level, they all got to go, every single one of them. I do know that Trump's getting rid of the prosecutors. We mentioned this, I think, last week or the week before, the prosecutors on the federal level. There's one for all, for each of the districts, the federal districts. There's 94 federal districts, and there's one for each. And, of course, they get to appoint their other individuals. But I know Trump is looking to fire them all. I think a lot of them are going to go, maybe some of them, a lot of them are going to go to jail. I think all these judges really need to go to jail. So there's going to be a lot of changes, but our big focus right now is getting common law back into the courts. They are fighting us tooth and nail. I've got a case going right now, and these people are really fighting tooth and nail with their anti-government movement guidebook, you know. And that one's on a personal level, though. You know, we're going to make a stance against that. Matter of fact, I think we're going to do a paper on that very soon. Probably get it done before January's out, get it out, I think. So this is something I'm going to work on. Now, Gerard, I don't know if you can add anything to what was said here concerning those meters, because I know you looked into them last couple of years ago, I think it was. And anything you want to add on that?
That was with that group In Power.
Yes, yes. Yeah. What's up with that? They giving help to people?
I don't know where they're at. I haven't talked to them lately. They were looking for some kind of enforcement. They got to a certain point, and they gave the order and demands, and they did lawsuits and stuff, but they didn't feel like they had a strong enforcement. That's what they wanted us to do.
Can we get a connection with them and maybe work on that?
Maybe, but I want to mention this, too. We had a very, very important Supreme Court ruling this year when that fella there won against the Environmental Protection Agency, and the Supreme Court said you cannot hold your rules and regulations on private people.
Right.
And they said if you don't have a contract with them specifically, like an NGO operator, and just because the electric company you have a contract with them, you really don't, because it's a monopoly. They're run by the Public Service Commission because they are a monopoly, and it puts them in a, so you don't really have a contract. You have no choice. In other words, if you want electricity, it's an adhesion contract. They're going to throw a contract at you that you can't negotiate, and those are the easiest ones to take down in court. However, that ruling throws them right out of the water because, you know, they can't say that you're not private. I mean, if you're a business, they can, right? But residential, And they can't say they have a contract with you because they don't. I mean, and I don't know that they'll go there, but now is a good time to start filing these suits because that ruling needs to be tested that the Supreme Court put out there. Now, you know, if you get it into court and you say you have no jurisdiction, your rulings have no effect, you know what I mean? I'm a private person. I'd love to see what they would say about that. I mean, and I wouldn't take it to the Supreme Court. I would take it in the lower courts first and give them an opportunity to, because Trump's coming out every day with stuff. They may not want to fight with it. Now, other people have won them in different ways, and the guys, the in power people have, you know, all the things that work successfully. And there's a, you know, what they did was they started going after the officials, and they started suing the officials, and that's what worked. But I can't give you the details. That was a couple of years ago. I haven't really talked to them since. But when they raised the bar and they said, look, you are in this position, and so you're the one that's in control, and so we're going to sue you for this. And they started having what they would do is the guys would back off because they didn't know what kind of, you know, they didn't know how to fight that. So I would look up and see what they have. I haven't checked on them lately.
Yeah, I'd have to talk with someone from that group that has the knowledge of everything they're doing. And, you know, basically, if I can get a lot of info from them, I'm sure I can write papers for that.
Well, there were two main guys, if you remember right. And we were,
yeah, it's a while back. I know you had some contact or really.
Yeah, well, we were in contact with the top guy.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's see if we can't connect with him and have a conversation, get a meeting going, see what's going on.
And you also have RFK Jr. is going to be fighting this, too.
Yeah, I think at some point that electric might become free. You know, I remember back in the 70s, after I came out of the service, the electric bill I was paying at that time was like $45 every 2 months. Okay, we didn't even get a bill every month. You got a bill every 2 months. It was $45. I mean, right now, it's my electric bill's like $800 a month. It's really ridiculous. I don't know how bad it is for other people outside of New York, and you know, but it's really high, and it's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know how they got it so high.
They
got me on thousands.
Well, you know, what they try to do is enforce things through proxy. Because they control the commercial process and they push things onto the, in this case, the electric company. And the electric company comes to us and tries to enforce it upon us. And again, it's through proxy that they're pushing that. And we can make a case on that. But first I'd have to understand more of the details of the pros and the cons of going into the system that that the legislator has pushed us through. So we'll see where we go with that.
Hey, John, let me ask you, why do you think the bills will be free, the power?
Well, I think there's going to be a lot of things happening. Money is going to change. We did something on, goodness, what was it, let me see what this was. Hang on a second.
When you went over the money thing?
There's a lot of things. First of all, I know our electric company is really owned or being pushed to own by foreigners. I know the post office they don't own the post office, but it's a foreign corporation that or company of people that are actually controlling the process, and there's something worked out with government through the post offices. And that's a problem. I was kind of surprised that Trump brought up this idea of potentially, you know, putting it out to private corporation to run it. I don't think that's a good idea. And it's something that we might want to really try to get more information on, and if it's going to go that route. I think we're at a point. Electric should be ultimately either super cheap or free. There shouldn't be so many big profits on it. And I don't even know if really considering certain things. I mean, it has always been, as long as I can remember in my lifetime, the electric company has always been in private hands. Maybe the government should be running that. Not that they run things so well, because of a lot of bureaucracy and things of that nature, but I think a lot of that's going to change. I think we see a lot of things. But certain things I do think electric should be free. I think it's something that they owe to the people, ultimately. They have burnt us. We have been burnt since our birth, and it goes back to our grandparents, you know, going back into the early, early 1900s. From once we came into the 20th century there, I mean, we have been beaten and destroyed so many ways. And in the late part of the 19th century, of course, they were building all these different things to really create this whole really incarceration. We're in a statutory prison, ultimately. And we're stuck each way we go. No matter what we do, we get stuck, you know. We have this problem with traveling. We get stuck there. You know, we go into the courts. They've turned things on its head. We get stuck there, and there's really, you can't get around things. You have to have a Social Security, number. And so many different things. You can't open a bank account without a Social Security number. So again, more control. And I think a lot of these things have to change and will change. But I do think that certain things should be free. I think electric should be a free one. The other thing is I've seen some really interesting things concerning free electric anyway, where you can really run a generator that runs on water. And I know I've been looking into that for maybe 20 years and playing around with that on my car and different things, running off vapors to get a better gas mileage.
But the
computer systems has to be really, worked out, because as soon as your engine starts to run cooler because of that hydrogen and coming through the engine, it sort of runs cooler, and that causes a situation for the software in there, for your car, to make alterations and do things. And because I know I was getting better mileage in the beginning for a short time, not a lot, maybe 5-10 miles a gallon more, something like that. Well, I think maybe more than that. But all of a sudden, then it went back up again because there was a problem with the computers. So, but anyway, there is great technology out there for free electric anyway, and it is something that has been held back from us. Potential for electricity goes back into, I remember when I was a kid, I heard about it, that there was somebody who had invented something with water and was able to run an engine on water, and that guy mysteriously died. And we're talking going back into maybe the 20s or the 30s. And I heard about that when I was a kid. And since then, I've seen a lot of people working on this kind of a thing. We have that one guy that they killed who was running his car on water. We have Bob Lazar. He runs his car on water, but he's not trying to sell it, so I guess they never tried to kill him. But he's been running his car on water for goodness, many, many years, 20 years, maybe more. So a lot of stuff is out there. We'll see what happens, and I think electric will eventually become free.
Listen, I got more information on electricity. Number one, in order for it to become free, free electric comes out of the air, comes out of,
right,
out of the ether. So they couldn't charge you for it if they wanted to. That's why J.P. Morgan cut and run on Tesla.
Right.
The fact of the matter is you can get a hold of one of those machines and put it in your yard, and you could do it, and they can't stop you. So once this technology gets out, or you could put one of those machines and run four houses off of it, and that's how we're going to get it. First of all, they're going
to... Well, they can set up a system and really just give it to the people.
They need to get rid of the wires. The wires are a problem. And you can't expect to get free electricity if they got to maintain an infrastructure of wires and cut branches and... My goodness, my daughter goes out every day. She works for a tree cutting place that keeps the trees off the branches, and they spend 80 hours a week cutting branches. Imagine the expense of that. They got teams and teams of guys. When you have wireless electricity, you eliminate all that expense. So, see, they like to pass the expense on, and they exaggerate it, and they play the game, and then there's the expense of whether they got to burn oil to make it or gas or whatever. And they're just sucked into this system that they're comfortable with. But once the technology is out, it's going to come. They're not going to be able to stop it, basically.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things out there that's really going to make major changes for our lives in many, many different ways.
But don't wait for an announcement from Central Hudson that we're giving you a letter for free.
Yeah.
Although they may at one point lower it a lot to keep you hooked up. You know what I'm saying? When it starts getting to be common knowledge, they may give you a super deal. I ain't going to mess with that machine. I can get that for, $30 a month. Why am I going to bother? That's the only way they're going to keep it, you know?
Yeah. And they're not well, they've been keeping us off for a long time, you know?
Yeah. So, I don't know. I had something else, but it escapes me now.
All right. Do we have another question there, Jan?
Yes, we do have one more. It kind of leads you down the garden path, so listen carefully.
Okay.
Is each branch of government independent of the other two branches of government? My understanding of a Supreme Court opinion is that the Supreme Court makes an opinion only on if a statute is constitutional or unconstitutional. In particular, the judicial branch gives an opinion only on legislation which is made in the legislative branch. And if the legislature makes an unconstitutional statute and the judiciary's opinion is that the unconstitutional statute is constitutional, the executive branch of the three branches of government does not have to enforce either an unconstitutional statute of the legislative branch or unconstitutional opinion of the judicial branch.
That's true.
Right. You like that, did you, Gerard?
Yeah.
Well, one of the,
what's the problem?
Well, there are a couple of problems with some of this, because first of all, the United States Supreme Court is not supposed to be making any decisions on issues. Okay? None. Zero. Their only decision is really an administrative courts, which does deal with legislation. Unfortunately, they apply legislation upon the people, and that becomes a problem. It's called civil law. And so that is a major problem. But the question at the beginning basically is the separation of powers, and it's exactly it, because, you have the administration, which really is, really runs the business, okay, and everything else is set up and gets the ability to choose individuals to run different agencies. The other thing, of course, is the courts. The courts should only be making decisions on administrative things or champion the Constitution. That's the only things that they should be working with. When someone's unalienable rights have been challenged, maybe due process or, right to travel or whatever, and it has to go up to the Supreme Court, they should hear it and they should make a decision on it, and they should always champion the people. But they don't, and that's the problem. And again, these people are that are running our courts, they're bar attorneys to begin with. They got their education through the bar, and they were lawyers, and then they became judges, and their minds have been corrupted. I was looking through this anti-government movement guidebook, these people are sick. They call us traitors because we believe in the common law. Just think about what they're saying. It's unbelievable. So, but in any event, that's the way that's supposed to be. And legislators are supposed to make legislation, but again, not for the people. So I think we're going to see a lot of major changes. And I think we're going to get, I think hopefully people in Trump's team really understands the real problem. The real problem are the minions of the New World Order, which is the bar attorneys. They're the ones that have destroyed everything in our nation, everything. They got their hands in all of it. And if they were not empowered the way they are, we wouldn't have hardly any of these problems. So they've been the most destructive. But nevertheless, they should really only be dealing with people with legislation that deals with people who are operating commercial activities or working for some government agency, but they should leave us alone. And that is that's our goal. And by the way, we have a lot of members, but not many people really give to support NLA. We got a lot of people who give $5 a month, and I don't think we have 100 people supporting us, and Matter of fact, I'm sure we don't. But even if 100 people were given $5 a month, that's, you know, that's what, let's see, 100 people times 5, and that's $500, right?
Yep.
Well, it's really not that much, but we do have some people who give a couple of hundred, and we have some people that give maybe 50 or 20. And again, if everyone was to give $5 a month, you know, nobody would have to give anything more than that, because we'd have a huge amount of money. We'd be able to go professional. We do need to go professional. Now, I had supported NLA out of my own pocket for many, many years. We didn't really ask many people for money. And we only recently, a few years back, 3, 4, 5 years, maybe at the most, I don't even know if it's been that long, where we turned to certain courses that people had taken, asking that they give us $5 a month or more. We call them a premium member, and then they have access to, I think, 2, maybe 3 courses. But we do give basic, you know, courses on the Constitution and civics for free. But then we have the higher course. You know, our law course is only $125, and it's a real good law course, in my opinion. It teaches you how due process in the courts work. And, you know, all the papers, the forms. And I believe we teach more of what goes on in the courts than they learn in the bar, for bar education. From talking with my brother, I know we have more to offer to people. But anyway, my point is this. We really do need some money. Our site is not updated. Hasn't been updated for a long time. And we started collecting some money for that, and we never collected enough. But as times go by, sometimes bills get higher, and then you have more and more problems. And our bills have gotten higher. And I've been supporting a lot of this with my sales of my books, which the money goes into NLA, and anything at the end of the month is left that I can take out for my own personal use, I do. But that, for the past couple of months, has not really been going that well. We did sell a lot of books and stuff, but it's kind of narrowed down. So anyway, my point is this. We need financial help. And again, if we can really get the word out, which I don't think we'll ever get to this point, where everybody or maybe 50% of the people that are signed in on NLA, if they gave $5 a month or more, we would be able to go professional. But we do have to upgrade our website. I am a little concerned about that. You know, I don't know. Terry, do you see any real serious problems if we continue with the website the way it is? Is something going to be really a problem? I know there's no support is the big problem, but...
No support. It probably won't show up right away, but then it'll start to degrade. And any security holes that are there, once people realize that... it's an older version, they'll exploit those security holes, and that's what I'm most worried about.
Okay, thank you. All right, so anyway, hopefully people will consider that, but I really want to go back to, you know, and by the way, once we get back to the real dollar, gold and silver, things are very, the world is different at that point. You know, I mean, we'd be asking people for maybe a quarter, maybe a lot to ask for, you know, I don't know, 25 cents. Because the dollar is only worth 0.75 cents. I updated this. It used to be a penny's worth, or two. No, I think it was called 2 cents worth. The dollar was down to 2 cents. I did that paper back in 2008. But just recently, about a week or a month ago, maybe a month ago, I revisited that paper and updated it from 2008, bringing us up to 2024. And looking at the ratio between gold and silver and what's going on, our dollar literally is worth 0.75 cents. That's the value you're getting out of that. And then you can see how inflation has to take its place in order to support that people can even live their life. And silver has really been held. As a matter of fact, gold has really been held back also, even though it's hit, $2,500 that I hear? I don't know if anybody knows what gold is going for now. But I think I heard, I think Eric, didn't you bring something up on gold? Wasn't it about $2,500 bucks an ounce?
It's been 26 to 27 of late. I don't know what it is today, but yeah, it was up even
more. Yep.
But then it came down a bit.
Well, that in itself still is not enough, because that's how bad the economy is. And silver, look at the ratio between silver and gold is 20 to 1. Okay, 20 ounces of silver, that's 20 silver dollars, equals 1 ounce of gold. Okay, that's the ratio going back before inflation existed, in the sense, because we didn't have a bank at that point. But you go back to 1913, the dollar, which was valued, has 100 cents in it, but the and that would be the silver dollar, the paper dollar supported by silver. But it was $19.96, okay, for an ounce of gold, which is 4 cents below the 20 silver coins, silver dollars. So we're going to have to be really get re-educated, because this is going to happen real quick. If we go to gold and silver, as soon as that happens, there's going to be a re-education, understanding money and how it works. It's going to take a little bit of while to get used to it. Again, things will be very, very different, you know. You might make $40 a week, but that $40 would go a long, long, long way. But anyway, I know we went through this paper a couple of weeks ago or a month ago or so. When
hey,
I wrote,
quick note, John. 2618 is gold today. That's down. And silver is 2974, and that is down. And I yield.
Okay, thank you. So 2600, I'll do it as a just a rough idea here. And silver was what? Silver was
2974, and it was down. It was at 31 for a while. It had gotten higher, 32, I think, but it's 2974.
So that's 89 to 1, almost 90. 90 to 1 on the silver when it should be 20 to 1. That's how undervalued silver is. You see, they had to pull silver down and raise gold higher than it should be, but now I think gold is really it's still too low. But in any event, they had to push silver down because silver is a necessity with the electronics. And gold, I think, has some play in it, too. I'm not sure if they use much gold. Well, I guess on the supercomputers and things of that nature, you want to go gold, you know. But silver plays a big role in the economy. Even copper, you know, copper plays a big role also. And that has been really held back. And, of course, they've taken the copper out of the pennies now. The only thing that has its still metal values that hasn't changed, and they almost changed it back in 2008, is the nickel. Okay, the nickel is still the nickel. I think it's I'm not sure whether it's 25%. Let me think. No. 75% copper and 25% nickel, I think. I'd have to look that up. But whatever the case may be, the metal in a nickel is the same. You know, I was saving nickels for a long time. And, you know, you can go buy a box of nickels. I forget what they even cost, maybe $100 or something, and you get these nickels. Because it's got the true value of its metals. But again, until everything evens out and we get rid of inflation, go back to gold and silver, and then everything will even out, level off, and things will be different. But we're going to have to get used to how money, you know, the value of money by, you know, what you earn, and then related also to what you have to spend. I know in New York City, many apartment buildings when I was growing up, and you go into all these halls of these apartments in the Bronx, you know, not just in Manhattan, in the Bronx, Brooklyn, Queens. Beautiful, beautiful. You know, you go into the buildings, a big lobby, tall ceilings, you know, stone and a lot of slate and different products a lot of woodwork. Even the apartments, a lot of woodwork, and so all that was constructed quite some time ago, you know, in the early part, or late 19th century and the early 20th century. A lot of those apartment buildings, I guess, were being built pretty much, and that's what was going. That's the kind of construction that was taking place back then. You know, today we have this cheap molding you put up. It's very simple and inexpensive and thin and so on. And then, of course, there's fake molding made of foam or different products. But in any event. All right, let's move on. We have another question, Jim?
No, that was the last one, John.
Okay. Did I answer it?
More or less.
Okay. All right. Let's see. We're going to open up the queue if anybody has. Let me put the queue on here. All right, so if anybody wants to get a queue, if you're on a phone, it's a *6 and a 1. If you're on an app or browser, then it's just should be a little button there somewhere saying enter the queue, so hop into the queue. So we have one person. Oh, we got two people in the queue. Okay, anybody else? I guess we'll take our first caller. It's, let me get the button there. Francine, go right ahead. You got the mic from New York. Got to get closer to your mic. We can't hear you.
Rossini from New York. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're coming in very, very low. I don't know why.
I don't know why either. I'm not doing anything different. Okay, I'll try to get closer. But
all right, I'll make my volume higher. Hopefully nobody blows my ears out. Go ahead.
Okay, also, because I didn't see the Q&A before, the button before, I hit reactions, the up arrow, so I don't know if that's interfering. I wouldn't think so, but just so.
Oh, it shouldn't.
Okay. Well, anyway, I had a couple of questions. The most immediate was the nickels. They changed their appearance, I don't know how many years ago, and now they have that funky-dunky face.
Yeah, they play games with all the stuff like that. Nickels have taken a few different moves, but yeah. And
is the composition of the metals the same, even though...
Yes.
It is, okay. All right, and...
Well, 2008... they tried to make a move to remove the nickel and probably the copper too, you know. But it didn't pass. I was very surprised at that. I had thought it passed in 2009, but I think Congress passed it in 2008 and the Senate rejected it. I don't know. I think that was the case. But in any event, it didn't go through, and it still has its full, you know, impact of metal value.
Copper and nickel, you're saying.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what the ratio is. I don't know. Maybe someone can look that up. It should be pretty quick to be able to,
okay,
you know.
What about the sliver of what might be copper in dimes, or is that gone? No,
everything's out. There's nothing worth anything in the dime, the quarters, pennies, nothing. It's all just garbage. I think it was 88, if I recall, that they took the copper out of pennies. You know? So.
Question was, or the earlier question was about the three branches of government, and this might be a stupid question, but it occurred to me as you all were talking about it, the original founding fathers, when they made the three branches, what did they foresee the legitimate purpose of the legislation was? In other words, I tend to equate legislation with statutes, which to me is anathema. Again, I could be misunderstanding. If legislation is making laws that generally lean towards inappropriate laws, unconstitutional laws, statutory laws, what then was the original intent of legislation if it were to be operating correctly under the Constitution?
Well, the problem, well, first of all, our founding fathers were very clear on what kind of legislation they could write. We find that in Article 1, Section 8. And there are 18 powers. We can go through that. You know, I may just read out a few of them here. You know, to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states and with the Indian tribes, establish a uniform rule of naturalization, and laws on the subject of bankruptcies, you know, to coin money and regulate the value thereof, establish post office, post roads. And so it's pretty well laid out here what they can do. And there's nothing in here about controlling the people because we're supposed to be free and independent. The problem is, you know, we've been assaulted by the minions of the New World Order even before we became a nation, because we had a lot of chancery courts already in the colonies, and there was a lot of things going on and anger about these bar attorneys coming in from England. I've heard of many stories. You know, they'd come into certain places and some of these people would be, you know, what is it, tarred and feathered. I don't know how true that is, but these are the kind of stories I've heard. I didn't pick that up in my research. But the thing is they ran chancery courts. Chancery courts is where one person makes the decision on everything. They try the case, and there's no jury, and it's just one individual, and it's a lot of corruption, a lot of problems. And I know they were moving out west early on, and I know there was a big movement trying to get the common law out there, so there was a lot of people trying to move that forward into going out west in the western states as they were being developed. But you read about some of these judges that really are really out there. But the problem is we have been plagued with these chancery courts, you know, it was 1934 Rules Enabling Act, where they combined civil law and common law, and well, let me change that. They combined equity, which really was civil law ultimately, but equity and law, and then they call it civil law, okay, or Roman law. So it's all the same thing. But the bottom line, that's when they slowly, well, they've been slowly creeping in on this. I remember, what is it? Let me think about this. Forget the guy's name. Anyway, there's been a problem with this going back into like 1850s and the 1860s. Already, you know, municipality law was a big play within cities, and that became a problem, and it just grew and grew and grew. But 1934 is really when we totally were knocked out, when legislators gave the authority to the United States Supreme Court to write their rules. So we're at it. We no longer have common sense, because before that we had common law, and common law is nothing more than common sense with an eye towards justice. That's what common law ultimately is. Very simple. It's written in the hearts. We know what the law is. We know when a wrongdoing's been done, and we know how to how a person should be, taken care of as far as getting some kind of justice, you know, compensation for whatever damages. But Lysander Spooner, that's the one I was thinking of. Lysander Spooner, he's the one that mentioned, and he talked about the grand jury, and the juries particularly, and he's the one that mentioned even back then there was major problems, and this was going back into, you know, Lincoln's time. So. Yeah, you know, when you're talking, it's like you're moving away from your mic and back in again. Do you have a mic on your headset, or are you talking in a mic on your
okay.
What are you, on a laptop?
Yeah.
But you got a built-in mic, so. All right. I didn't really get that question.
So what I said was the date that you mentioned, 1850-1860, is around. And also 1934 is around World War II. A lot of times we know that wars have to do with bankers wars. Civil War wasn't just about liberating the slaves. It was also about states wanting to be self-serving, how they operate their businesses to include what they believe, their property, slave labor, and their right as to self-determine. I'm not saying right or wrong, I'm just saying that that's part of the formula or the part of the mix factors that went into it. And so I'm just wondering if you had any comments about that in terms of what the relationship is between these laws and their timing with the wars.
Yeah, I think a lot of things is tied into that because it takes people's attention away, and it's easy for them to bring in all this evil stuff. And yeah, it was in 1938 when they rolled out the rules of the court, and they'd done away with the common law rules. Which, again, is just common sense, okay? And so what, we have World War II rolls in not far, a couple of years later. So and again, you know, the intensifying of that probably took its most push probably as we were in war or heading into war and so on. So yeah, I would agree with that. You know, I know there's some of the research that was done by goodness, his name. What's the name of that guy, Gerard? Do you remember that he did an interview? Norman Dodd, that's it, Norman Dodd. Norman Dodd was the chief investigator for unconstitutional things going on in government. And he wrote, he was able to get in, and if anybody hasn't seen that video, you should watch that video. We have it on our site. I know it's in one of our courses, too. I think probably the civil law courses. The civics course, I mean. So we have it in a civics course, and we do have it up on the website. And he was interviewed by
G. Griffin,
right. So he was interviewed by Griffin, and it was an hour long, but it seemed like it was a lot longer than that because he covered a lot of stuff, and it was just so intense and interesting. And he was able to get into the Rockefeller papers back in the trust, going all the way back in the turn of the century. And he was surprised he was able to get in there. He said, these guys probably don't even realize what was in there. And one of the things they mentioned was a great way to change a nation and to steer them in a different direction is by getting them into a war. So a lot of things took place in World War One that really geared us into a situation where a lot of changes were made during that time period. And same thing in World War II. Income tax really became the big thing and the product ultimately coming out of World War II. They started to hit the income tax, which, again, they've always called it, you know, voluntary, but in any event, we know that's not true. In any event, you know, that was one of the biggie things that came out of the war. It got the people's attention. People felt that they had to give money. They accepted it a lot easier. But then, you know, of course, the war came and went, and they didn't roll it back. They kept it going, and they pushed it forward more. So there is a truth to that.
All right, two more quick questions, and then I will pass it off. The legislation question and the states and Article 1, Section 8, et cetera, that you were mentioning, did they envision, the Founding Fathers, those areas that they envisioned being like commerce and so on, did they envision that encompassing driver's licenses and marriage licenses?
Well, again, you know, anything with commercial activities, they can create a license for that, and they have, they did, and that's lawful. But again, you know, it was that push for civil law, which really started out municipality law, which is the law of the cities, okay, the law of the city. And that's where, and the chancery courts were spreading all over the place back then. So again, we were off on the wrong foot right from the very beginning. And eventually the whole system was taken over by that process. So again, we could be thankful to the Bar Association for all that, for our disgusting educational system and everything else that they've been doing. You know, everything, they control it all. They got their hands in everything.
Travel anyway. Was supposed to be protected.
It's always, yes, it's very clear. Look, at the Supreme Court very early on, point after point after point, constantly, you know, championed the right to travel. Okay, so it was clear.
Commerce, you know, like lumping all driving into commerce, and really lumping marriage into commerce.
Yeah, and all of this has gotten through because of ignorance. The people are ignorant, and therein is the purpose of National Liberty Alliance, to try to get rid of that ignorance. Because, as Jefferson said, people expect to be ignorant and free. They forget what never was and never will be. So.
I have another question, but I don't remember. So thank you very much.
Okay. All right. Take our next caller. I'm going to hand things over to you, Gerard, in a few minutes. But let's take Ross. You got the mic right ahead.
Hi, John. You can hear me?
It blew my eardrums out. I can hear you. I can hear
you. You need to turn down your volume now, okay?
Right. I had it up with Frocine, so. But go ahead.
Do these people will be successful removing Trump before he is getting office?
What about successful and Trump in office? What?
No, I was just saying, because people say Trump violated the 14th Amendment.
Right. You had mentioned that before, something about the 14th Amendment. I think it was last week, wasn't it? The 14th Amendment is originally, and this is the game they play. Here's your lawyer's game. The original purpose of the 14th Amendment, when it said that anybody that was born in the United States is a United States citizen, and that whole thing was for the slaves, because that took place after slavery, and they put the 14th Amendment to protect the slave, and that's how they sold it to us. And then, of course, it's not really that clear in the Constitution, and I agree with Trump. It should be updated. We should go back and look at that 14th Amendment and word it more properly. Matter of fact, it's not even necessary anymore to say that if you're born in the United States, you're a citizen. I mean, that's an automatic on the one hand, but if slaves were not citizens, and after slavery, their children, they were born here, and their children were born here, and their parents were born here, and that's why the 14th Amendment was able to get through. And that was a play, a game, ultimately, that the lawyers put together. And we fell for it.
No, I was talking
There's
about...
There's nothing wrong with the law to protect the people, because I understood that what they were saying and why they were saying that, but they should have made it clear that it was for slavery. I think the problem was is they didn't want to use the word slavery in the Constitution. And that's why they call, was it, 3/5 of a person? Does anybody remember what they referred to, which is the slavery as far as counting?
Yes, it was 3/5.
3/5? Yeah, I think it was. Yes. But they never mentioned the word slavery, okay? And again, that was an embarrassment to those who understood the evil of it. And we pushed upon us.
No, I was talking about the clause that talks about the insurrection part of the 14th Amendment.
Okay, let me go take a look at it, and we'll read through it. You want to read the part you're thinking of?
I don't have that up right now.
Okay, let me see how I get it. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States.
It's the second clause of the article, I think, clause 3.
Okay. Because we have a section 2 and a section 3
yes.
and a section 4. So you think it's section 3? No, that's sure. Senate. Representative shall be apportioned among the several states. What am I looking for particularly? I didn't realize there was so much in the 14th Amendment.
It's the one with about insurrection in the 14th Amendment.
Okay, insurrection. Okay, I see it. Let me think here. We would start. Well, no person. Okay, Senator, blah, blah, blah. State has taken an oath, remember? Okay. Constitution. Okay, let me see where this sentence begins all the way.
I see it here.
It's not so easily, but it says, or as members of any state legislator or as an executive or judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution of the United States shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. But Congress may, by vote of 2/3 of each house, remove such disability. Are you talking about this potentially being used against the enemies of the people that are in government?
Yes.
Yeah, I can see how this could be applied. But logic in itself applies because it's treason, number one, And you know, there's another word for it, which is called fraud, but treason is much more powerful because that usually calls for the death penalty in most cases, I would imagine, and should. But yeah, the whole thing is fraud also. These people think they're going to get away with it by moving out of the country or, you know, there's extradition right, you know, abilities that can take place. So we're going to reach out and grab them anyway. But they think they could be pardoned, or they think that they're okay because they have some kind of a sovereign immunity, which is all BS, and so on. So I think we're going to see a lot of Congress disappear. You know, they're going to be removed. I mean, just that one case that is going up against the oaths. What's those brothers' name? Anybody remember the brothers' names? I think you mentioned it once before for me, Eric.
The Brunson brothers.
Brunson. Yes, there you go. So the Brunson case, the big thing on that, and it had a few things in it, but the most powerful part of it, I think, was dealing with that and with not having an oath, which means they're out of there. So, but I think a lot of them need to be arrested.
Real quick, hey, there is a lot in the 14th Amendment, and just of note, of interest, you know, you hear a lot of talk about reparations, at least you have over the past couple of years, and you'll see in Section 4 of the 14th Amendment, reparations are illegal. So it's really just communists. People don't know that they're communists when they say, I've heard people say they're reparationists, and my thought is, oh, so you're a communist. Because that's really what it is. They just don't know it. But listen to this. Here it is right here. The validity of the public debt of the United States authorized by law, including debts incurred for payment of pensions and bounties for services in suppressing insurrection or rebellion, shall not be questioned. But neither the United States nor any state shall assume or pay any debt or obligation incurred in aid of insurrection or rebellion against the United States or, here it is, any claim for the loss or emancipation of any slave, but all such debts, obligations, and claims shall be held illegal and void. So there you go right there. The 14th Amendment makes it illegal to pay reparations. So that's pretty interesting. Also, what I want to say is that I've not read all of the debate on the 14th Amendment in the Congressional Record, but I read a good bit of it, and none of these lawyers' tactics are in there. It's straightforward. That stuff came after. That stuff came after that debate, and if I can find it, John, I'll send it to you. But it's really straightforward.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue with that point, with the exception of the first part, where all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. Okay, now maybe there's something in the subject to the jurisdiction thereof that might be helpful to make it make the point stronger that it doesn't include people who just come in and you know, like anchor babies. Okay, which Kamala Harris is an anchor baby. I don't know how many people know that.
Yeah, but that's a ludicrous notion. It's like, I think what it's saying. I mean, to prove your point, I think what it's saying is if you look at, for example, the executive, the second article, for the executive officer of the country, the president. It's two-pronged. He has to be a citizen of the United States, and his parents had to be naturalized or born here when he was born. And so if you think about that being – that defining the idea of being subject to the jurisdiction, I think it makes sense in that way. It makes a lot of sense in that way. You can't – I mean, the idea that you could come to a country and do it intentionally because you know when your wife's going to give birth, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
And then you jump in the country, you have your baby there, and then you say, no givesies, backsies. You can't. That's absurd. It's a ridiculous notion. I mean, it's communism. It's a stupid communist idea. The idea that you can just come here and have a baby and say, oh, we get to stay here now. It's absurd.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true. They knew what they were doing, but on the one hand, but on the other hand, you know, the people who are enforcing these things, they're just useful idiots. and they don't really study the law themselves deep enough, you know. You know,
Precisely, you got it.
Some people have been born out of the country to two parents that are American citizens, and they are an American citizen no matter where they're born. It doesn't matter, you know. If they were traveling while the birth took place, or whatever the case may be, or visiting, you know, then they're of course a citizen. What was that senator's name? No name. I guess his no name has been so long that I forget his real name.
His daughter was. I can't think of it either. But yeah, his daughter was in the government too. McCain.
McCain, that's it, yes. And he was born, you know, out of the country, and because I think his father was in the service and he was out at the time. They tried to make a big thing about that years ago when he was running for president. And yet Obama, they gave him nobody picked up on Obama. We know that he wasn't even born here. But the key thing here is his father was not and never became a citizen of the United States, and that disqualifies him.
Amen.
Hey, Gerard, you want to take the mic? You got any other questions, Ross?
No, I was just saying all these people on the left want to say Trump is an illegitimate president because he was convicted of all these false claims of business fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that Congress should remove him from office.
Yeah, well, they're doing everything they can, and nothing seems to be working for them. That's not going to work for them either. You know, so... their big thing is to really cause havoc and chaos, and that, I think, is really what's coming down upon us soon. But that may not work out too well either, so we'll see how that goes.
Yes.
And by the way, we only have one other person after Ross here in the queue, so if anybody else wants to get into the queue, again, if you're on a phone, it's a *6 and 1.
I yield.
Huh?
I yield.
Okay.
Okay. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay.
What are you coming in two ways? Because I see you look like you're muted, but you're talking and I'm hearing you.
I'm on two different screens, so that's why.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay. Yeah, I'll be here in the background, but I may have to be pulled away for a short here or there. But go ahead, you got the mic. We do have the next person. And again, we have E there is next. But anybody else wants to get into the queue? There's nobody else in the queue after E. *6 and 1 if you're on a phone. And again, if you're on an app or a browser, there should be a button. Enter the queue, whatever it says. I don't know.
Get in here. Getting is good. Yep. Or I'm going home early.
Yeah, well, we'll have a conversation, you and me then. All right, go right ahead. Hit to the next person.
Okay, E.
Okay. Hello.
Where can I say to you from, E?
Yes, my name is Elena. Hi, John. I do have the question. My first question is, how can I contact you to get a legal advice?
We don't give legal advice, but anyway.
Well, this is, look at... The purpose of this open forum, and we used to do this for 3 hours, by the way, but we broke it back to 2. The purpose of the open forum, which is every week, is so that people can come in and ask, you know, those who put this together, Gerard and I as co-founders, questions, and we give whatever we can. We could give a little thought on a case, but we can't really spend time on a case because we're too busy focusing in on dealing with the Supreme Court and the subversion within the federal judiciary. You know, they all are guilty of denying us our due process and applying unlawful laws upon us and applying their rules as law. I mean, go figure that one out. They get away with it. But in any event, if you have a question, we can see what we could do to answer it. But we can't get too deep into it, and we usually do get questions when people report.
Yes, I do have the question. So my question is, I know a person who broke the Satan statue at the Capitol, at the state capitol, and the charges are pending right now. So what would be the best way for that person to get help?
Well, what did they do at the state capitol?
So the state capitol has had the Satan's statue. The satanic group legally placed a Satan statue at the Capitol.
Yeah.
And the person who is the Christian came and broke that statue.
Oh, so now they got you know.
Was it on government land?
The church is a pending, so.
But I mean, the statute, was it on private land or government land?
Oh, it's at the Capitol.
At the Capitol.
It's in there with Lincoln.
It's on public land. Well, we're a Christian nation, and people can deny all they want, but it's very, very clear. We've written a paper on that one also. And so that's interesting. I know. Go ahead, Gerard.
How long ago was this? When did they break that statue? Was it real recently?
Yes, very recently. Yes.
Like how many weeks?
Oh no, less than a week.
Oh, less than a week. Okay.
Yes.
So when you say the charges are pending, it's not that long has gone by, so that's not a significant fact. Because if they wait and wait and wait to bring charges, first of all, they can only wait so long before they bring charges. And although they'll tell you different. Well, we can come back a year later or whatever. That would tell me that they're afraid to bring it to court because they're afraid that it's going to be too controversial. Now, I don't know that that's the case. I would delay as long as possible because the mood of the country is against Satanism. So, you know, look, you go in and break a statue, you know, what are they going to do? I mean, they can fine you, they can put you in jail, or both. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it is mischief, but the question is should that statue have been there? It was an abomination. And, you know, if you went into court, if you could use John's paper that he just sent in that documents what our forefathers say about us being founded on Christian principles, that would be your defense right there, I think. So I don't know what to tell you about that. They'll probably be more than willing to plea it down to a fine or something like that, because I can't see them tackling this. I mean, that's Washington D.C. That's a whole nother ball game there, because they don't operate under the Constitution, so to speak. So I don't know. What they're going to do or whatever, but I'm sure they're going to come in with a plea. And, of course, the Satanists are going to be really pissed. They're going to want their statue back. It should have never been in there in the first place. So I don't know how much that is known about that. This person should be trying to raise money online, though. You know, I mean, I would go to the Christian groups and let them put some money in the till for their defense. Because I think there's numerous different defenses you can make on that, you know?
Okay. So what would be the best way, where to start for that person?
Well, I don't know. First of all, one of the things, they need to do research, because who approved that statue? How did that statue get there in the first place? Is what I would want to know. How does a statue of Satan, I know how it got there, because the demonist said, you know, you got a statue of this, you got to give us our guy. Because I forget there was some saint or apostle or something, so they wanted equal time.
So it was approved by the state administration.
What administration?
The state's administration.
Oh, sorry, Capitol. Yeah, Capitol.
What you should do is shine a light. You should shine a light on those people. Because Gerard's right. There's a there's a rise in Christianity, and there's and people are going that the height of the perversion of the First Amendment's freedom of religion has just about come and passed. But you saw it a few years ago when the Church of Satan came out and said, if we can't abort babies, that goes against our religion. And so, but Christians are on the rise, thankfully, at least to some degree. So what I would do is advise this person to highlight the people in the state administration who are doing this, because they're undoubtedly Satanists. And I think Gerard's pulling something up, or John is, but also I want to bring to your attention Joseph Story's commentaries on the Constitution. If you go to this, you can go to it at lonang.com, and a great patriot friend of mine by the name of Nikki pointed this website out to me. It's a great, great website. Laws of Nation, Laws of Nature and Nature's God is what it stands for, lonang.com. It's a very clean website, easy to find materials on there, lonang.com. But you'll find Joseph Story's commentaries on there. And if you look towards the bottom of his commentaries, it's the part about the amendment. And section 1871, and it's got a bunch about what Gerard and John are talking about. And this is Joseph Story, I think in the early to mid-1800s. But listen to this. It says, section 1871, the real object of the amendment, this is the First Amendment's protection of the God-given right of freedom of religion. The real object of the amendment was not to countenance, much less to advance, Mahometanism or Islam or Judaism or infidelity. It really tickles me how he puts all three together, Mahometanism, Judaism, and infidelity. I think it's right on. By prostrating Christianity, but to exclude all rivalry among Christian sects and to prevent any national ecclesiastical establishment which should give to an hierarchy the exclusive patronage of the national government. In other words, what he's talking about is there was in the original colonies, nine of them had said, we're going to go with a certain brand, a certain sect of Christianity. And the founding fathers said, whoa, wait a minute. We just escaped this in England. We can't do this. We have Scottish Presbyterians, English Puritans, Dutch and German Reformers, and they all agree on some really important things, but it's all Christianity. Anyway, my point is, check this out. Highlight those people, because Gerard is right. Christianity is on the rise, and the Satanists had their zenith, I believe, in the past 18 months, and I think they're going to start getting beaten back, and I yield.
Well, a big thing is going to be publicity, that they get the word out, that everybody knows it's happening, and I would start a GoFundMe and all that stuff to make it an issue, because it's perfect timing for that to be an issue. And they may lose their stomach for it at this point. If they're smart, they would.
Well, you know, one of the problems, though is the destruction of property, and, it should have been done in a different way. I'm wondering who put that statute up and where exactly where was it actually sitting?
It was the state administration.
Yes, it's a state administration because they said it's the freedom of speech.
Well, the state is...
That's also upholding a certain religion, okay, by making some kind of a legislation concerning the practice of some religion and putting a statute like that up there. You know, to an extent, Christianity is different in a certain sense, you know, and our founding fathers talked about that being the centerpiece of the education within our nation. But they also left it open that people really have the decision making, but it should be strongly encouraged. And of course, the idea was not to really get involved in doctrines, church doctrines and different things of that nature, but to use the Bible as a historical book, and particularly for the purpose of teaching morality, because that's the key. By teaching our children the morals, and that's what the Bible will teach. You know, the Old Testament, it's different to glean those kind of things out of it. I mean, there are certain places you can glean things out that are pretty simple, like the Ecclesiastes or Proverbs, you know. A lot of people can go right into those books and read and understand it very quickly, a lot of what's being said in there. There's much deeper spiritual meaning in there, and that may not necessarily be one to be expounded upon in a school, but reading for the purpose of education, reading for the purpose of morality, to train up a child on how they should walk. And the Lord says, if you train up a child on how they should walk, that when he is older, they will not depart from that. You know, we do take our, even though we may even be rebellious, usually we take along in our life eventually at some point what we were trained up to be, if there was a training, of course. I mean, unfortunately, some children grow up without any training. They don't get it at home, and then they send them to school to be totally demoralized. So, but again, yeah, that's putting a religion up there, putting a statute up there. Again, they're historical figures. You know, there were courthouses that have, for instance, and different buildings in Washington even, that has maybe Moses and others, you know, statutes built right into some of the structures, the buildings. But remember, Moses is the, you know, brings us the law, the Ten Commandments, and that, of course, is an important thing.
He was a human being. He wasn't an entity.
Well, that's true, but nevertheless,
up there, you know, you might as well have put, you know, Mercury and you know, a couple of the other gods, so to speak.
Yeah, well, that goes to gods now.
He's a historical person.
Yeah, but you know, look what our founding fathers really wanted to do. Let me see. Let me get that paper up here because I think I have it in this paper here. In this paper, right here. Okay, this is interesting. At its founding, the land of America was looked upon by many as representing a new Jerusalem and or a city upon a hill and or a new Israel, drawing from 2 Samuel 7:10, where God said, "Moreover, I will appoint a place." This is that place for my people, Israel. It's talking about New Testament era, and will plant them. And that they may dwell in a place of their own and move no more. Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord, and the people whom he hath chosen for his own inheritance. That's in Psalms. But here's the big thing. At the time when, as time went on, some, and by the way, you know, our the structure of our government is, it comes right out of the first five books of the Bible. Okay, particularly, you know, Exodus and, Exodus particularly has a lot there. But also the first five books of the Bible were structured underneath that. The idea of 12 individuals making a decision in a court of law brings us right to the 12 apostles. 12 is the key. But anyway, as time went on, some of our founding fathers of America used biblical metaphors and word pictures described the new land. On July 4, 1776, the Continental Congress instructed Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, and John Adams to design a seal for the United States. Jefferson was more ambitious and proposed design for both sides of the seal. Jefferson wanted and I think we should go back to this. Jefferson wanted an illustration of the Israelites' exodus out of slavery and bondage from Egypt for the front of the seal. Jefferson had a disdain for the institution of slavery. He never bought a slave. He inherited them. In Virginia, the emancipation of a slave was illegal, and he refused to sell his slaves. Therefore, Jefferson fought unsuccessfully to change the repugnant law in Virginia, twice as a legislator, once as a governor. In his draft of the Declaration of Independence submitted to the Continental Congress, he listed one of the crimes of the kings as forcing the institution of slavery on the colonies in Americas. In America. In this draft, he described slavery as a cruel war against human nature itself, violating its most sacred right in life and liberty. And for the backside of the seal, Jefferson proposed an illustration of Hengist and Horsa, 5th century Saxon warriors from Germany. They came to England as mercenaries to help Britain tribe defend themselves against the rival tribes of the Picts and the Scots. Now, Franklin had a similar idea to Jefferson and wanted to illustrate a scene from the Exodus of the Israelites. The seal would show Benjamin Franklin's design portrayed Moses parting the Red Sea with Pharaoh and his chariots being overwhelmed by the waters with the motto, "Rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God." Thomas Jefferson became so enamored with this motto, he incorporated it on his own personal seal design. The Liberty Bell in Philadelphia predates the Revolution. The Pennsylvania Assembly had the Liberty Bell made in 1751 to mark the 50th anniversary of William Penn, 1701 Charter of Privileges, which served as Pennsylvania's original constitution. The following Bible verse is on the bell, Leviticus 25:10, proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. So no one could deny that many of our founding fathers of the United States of America were men of deep religious convictions based in the Bible and their Christian faith in Jesus Christ. Of the 56 men who signed the Declaration of Independence, nearly half, 24 of them, held seminary or biblical or Bible school degrees. The following Christian quotes of the founder, well, I'm not going to read those, but anyway, this is a paper, and I'm going to post it up in the same place because we did get this out to a lot of people that you know, are really trying to change this nation. But we'll put it up right here on the front page over here. There's a couple of papers I haven't gotten up here yet, and that's one of them. I want to get them up here. I'll put them right under here, the addendum to the grand jury presentment, and we'll put two more up underneath that.
I got one last thing I would give advice.
Just make my final point on this, though. That was a wrongdoing to go and destroy some property. It should have been done in a different way, and I think they could have got the same results because the times, they are changing. And there is, you know, I can't believe how much is really changing already. You know, I mean, I knew it's going to get big, but, I mean, people are really turning quickly. It's becoming much, much more popular. You know, liberty and freedom and bringing us back to our roots and so on and so forth. So I think if they would have approached that and went after the legislators who, I guess the legislators who put that out there, to put that statue up there, it could have been beaten in the courts and taken down. And it also would raise the consciousness of the people concerning the problem. Back to you, Gerard.
Okay. If they wanted to be really smart, they could have done that. That person should have done that like they did to Georgia Guidestones. Put some dynamite on it in the night, and blow the hell up, and not be around. Nobody got arrested for that. The other thing I was going to say is you should do some homework, because they were, back when Antifa and all the riots and George Floyd and all that, they were pulling down statues and things all over the country. How many of them went to jail? How many of them were even charged with that? You know? So some very famous statues they ruined. And I would use that as kind of a precedent. You know, oh, look, you go after these people. You didn't go after these people that pulled down this statue and that statue. And, you know, most of them were probably Christian men and generals and things like that that they didn't like. And they didn't get charged. Why didn't they get charged? You know? So I would find out how many people actually got charged. Because by not charging somebody, you're encouraging it. Right? I mean, in my mind. So just something to think about. Maybe something to include in the case.
So my question is, where should that person start? Because that person is not knowledgeable on their...
First of all, if they don't know how to write papers and things like that, then they should not be going into court on their own, because they're going to get... They don't know procedure. They won't know how to move things in the court and things like that. I hate to say it, but they'll need an attorney. And, you know, unless you can get, you know, somebody like Brent Winters, who's a common law attorney and not a bar attorney. But, you know, there may be some bar attorneys that are willing to defend this particular thing, but they probably won't go where we just went. I don't know. Or maybe they would.
I think that case is going to be a very hard one to fight should they come and charge them, because they destroyed property. There's another way they could have gone about it, and they didn't. And I'm surprised a Christian individual, was this person a pastor or something, or an elder in a church or something?
Not in my knowledge.
I got to get this phone.
Not in my knowledge.
But they were obviously Christian, I would think.
Yes.
You can, I mean,
complete insanity.
What about being so moved? There was a fella in a, there was a municipal board, I guess the county board in Florida, where a fella who was part of the, one of the board, who sat on the board there in this municipality, he got up and said a prayer to Satan, and they have it on video. I mean, you know, I think it's terribly rude to strike someone, but in the moment, would you not be compelled to strike that fella? I mean, just from the fear of God. And what about the argument this fella destroyed property, but maybe he was trying to stop the corruption of a minor? I mean, don't children go into these places? Would you not be so shocked if you were to see a statue of Satan? Would you not want to protect not even just children, but adults?
Well, if it's the statue, if it's the statue, I think it is, he has his hand over a little boy and a little girl. Satan is in the middle.
You've seen the statue?
Yes, it's this is known. It's out there. It's Satan with his horns, and they got a little girl and a little boy, probably, you know, in the 7-year-old range.
Oh,
it's,
the Baphomet thing.
Yes.
Does he have cans? I mean, does he have like a hole in his breasts? Excuse me.
Yes, he's Baphomet. And he's got a little girl, a little boy at his side with his hand on their shoulder.
I would use the argument that he wanted to stop. He was so shocked that he wanted to stop the corruption of not just minors, but adults. I mean, that's shocking. That's shocking to a Christian.
It's pornography. And, how about that?
It's certainly corrupting. And I would argue fear of God. And I would make that argument. Both corruption of a minor and adult and the fear of God.
Trouble is you got to find jury of your peers in Washington, D.C., where that statue is pretty tough.
Oh, no, it's not in Washington, D.C. It's actually in the state. It's a different state.
They were talking about a different statue, though. They were talking about a different statue.
Okay, sure.
Oh, but the statue he destroyed was in a different state?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what state was it in?
Minnesota,
okay.
Oh, and it's been
almost a week and they haven't charged him yet?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Well, they may not.
Well, they may be considering things because they don't want to fight this battle now. They know that public sentiment is against them.
Yes.
So I would, you know, I mean, they may come out with a deal before they charge him. Let me say, look, I plead to this, and we'll forget that.
He can't defend his actions, okay? But he can defend the fact that that statue doesn't belong there. And again, he should have done it a different way, because Congress shall make no law, you know.
I don't know. I think desperate times calls for desperate actions.
Yeah, well, no,
I would defend
the desire of that, believe me, but we can't do that. But look, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or forbidding the free exercise thereof. Okay, so that's establishing a religion. It's called Satanism. Well, hold it. What was the statue? The statue was Satan, right?
Baphomet.
Right. Oh, so it is a Baphomet. Okay, same difference. It's the same difference.
It's the exact statue we were talking about. Although I don't know if it has a little girl, a little boy, like the one at the Capitol does.
Yeah, it's probably just making that hand gesture, right, with the two fingers or whatever that means. It's some kind of Satanist symbol, and then it's got female...
Google Baphomet in the Capitol, and it'll come up, the picture. Now, I don't know about the one in Illinois. I would look at both of them just for interest, you know. But anyway, you got a lot of work to do, and I don't know how you're going to file papers if you're not, you know, schooled in procedure. It's going to be a disaster. Got to find an attorney or somebody that's willing to do this for them. And the way you do that is you start a GoFundMe. Because if the attorneys see money coming in, they'll be more apt to want to do it, you know. And some of them will just do it pro se, not pro se, what do you call it, where they do it for free. Just because...
Yeah, but if they did charge him with a crime, he's going to have a hard time defeating that crime.
Pro bono.
pro bono. They may do it pro bono.
He's going to have a difficult time defending that because he destroyed it.
Temporary insanity. Come on. You got to think outside the box.
Was his
I was pressing all these people pull these statues down. I didn't think anything was going to happen to me. You let them pull down.
But the problem is he'll put himself in jail because he'll reveal his intent once he says why. Okay? That proved intent. He's guilty. He's done. I mean, again, the best thing is that they haven't charged him yet, and they may not, because you're right. They don't want the publicity focused in on that.
Yes, especially when...
When was that statue put up, I wonder?
I don't know. Illinois? Is that the state, Illinois?
Minnesota.
Or Minnesota. Okay, I don't know where I got that Illinois.
Yeah, E, what do you have any idea when that statue was put up there?
No, I don't.
That's interesting to wonder about that. But, well, anyway, we're about to take our nation back. Things are about to change, and there's going to be a lot of great things. There's no doubt about it.
My question, in order to reach to Brett Whitten,
Brett Allen Winters. Well, I don't know. You know, he kind of would like to spend something like that because he's a pretty pious Christian himself. But on the other hand, he's also. I think he'll see what I see. Also, is the fact that, you know, it really is destruction of property. I mean, it's public property in this case. As evil as it might be, it's still property and it's public, and there is a better way to have dealt with that. He should have chosen a better way. And this is a lesson for everyone, because, you know, you could have a problem any time, and if you don't know how to defend yourself, then, you know, you're going to be subject to their abuse. And again, that's why we put this course up here, Court Access in the Common Law, that people should consider taking. Because you should know the law. You should be able to take care of your own legal business. And if you have a problem, you'll be able to deal with that in court. And if it's a criminal thing, I think it is kind of, it depends. It may be wise to have a lawyer to represent you to some degree, but you have to be control of that case. Whatever is written, whatever is decided, and whatever is claimed in the court by any lawyer that you might be working with, you should have to first approve that paper, and maybe even put your own papers in through him or through yourself. But, you know, I would say that should be only, you know, if you're really kind of weak in understanding how the process works, you know, it's helpful to have a lawyer to help you along. But also, if it's a criminal thing in certain cases, especially if you're guilty, you're going to want to have someone else talk. But all in all, you should be able to take care of your own business.
I would try to get a hold of Joe Biden and tell him he can fix his reputation by pardoning me.
Yeah.
You know, you laugh, but anyway.
CommonLawyer.com. CommonLawyer.com if she wants to find Brent.
Right, Brent Winters. CommonLawyer.com will bring you to his website.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Have a good night. God bless.
Thank you. God bless.
Don't throw stones around statues. You get in trouble. Okay. We have F.W. Kogi. I don't know what that is. Kogi Bowie.
Frocine from New York.
Go ahead. Your mic is open there.
Frocine, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. I think she said she's here. You're coming. Can you get closer to your mic?
I can't hear anything.
I'm here. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can barely hear you. I don't know. Maybe you want to check your... You know, you should go into your settings and check your mic. You're going to have to, you know, make your volume up, Gerard, to hear. I had to do that before.
Oh, man.
And then Ross came in and blew my eardrums out.
Like she's on Pluto.
I don't know.
I can't find my volume control.
Can you hear me?
Well, it wouldn't... Yeah, Frocine, you should check your mic you know, I think they have like a boost on your mic that you can put up. I think that's on the mic side, right, the boost?
Yeah. How come I can't turn this off. What the heck is going on? Because start meeting is using my microphone.
Sound recorder?
That's weird.
Yeah, down on the bottom, there should be like a little speaker. You should be able to open it up and open the sound settings.
Yeah, I'm doing that right now.
And let's see if that'll
do it. It's not a speaker. It's a microphone. It's different. Cause it's
right, but still it still have sound settings. And you could see on mine, I opened mine up and it tests your microphone and manage the sound device. You could probably make it... I think there's a boost on it, or is that on volume that's a boost?
Boost. I'm just going to type
it. This is weird. I've never seen this.
Nope, we don't want to do that.
There's no sound control. Voice activation.
Anyway.
I know exactly what you're
talking about. I'll raise my volume. Raise your volume for her to ask the question. So.
Right. I'm telling you, it won't let me raise my volume.
Okay, well, ask the question. I'll catch it for you, Francine.
Regarding that statue thing, if the man that did it is a young man, maybe in his 30s, no more than 40s, I think he was running for some local position. And this was out actually quite a number of months ago. And maybe half a year at least ago, and it sounds right, Minnesota, and it made some rounds of, you know, local podcasts, so it was not, what I'm hearing is not recent, and it was a statue.
You might want to shorten it up, because we can barely hear you, and people listening in on the recording is going to hear just silence from you, but try to get to the question, and we'll see if we can give a...
So if I was seeing those rounds, it was making podcasts as what it is, which is like someone defending equal or Christian representation in statues. It was not an unknown thing, and I'm a little surprised that he's saying that it's recent. First of all, second of all, it did get play. And the only way you're going to defend that, or I think you're going to defend that, is if you have popular support. Because...
Yeah, but the law doesn't really care about that, and it shouldn't pop up with popular, you know, what might be popular to support. The bottom line is intent and the destruction of property. Once he opens his mouth and tells why he did it, he just proved intent, and he's done as far as the law is concerned. Now, a jury might decide, hey, you know, if he's a jury trial, you know, hey, we're not going to convict this guy anyway. That's a possibility. But, you know, he shouldn't have done that. He really shouldn't have.
And that's what I'm saying. He, you know, it's going to be hard because he did destroy private property. He could and should have gone through it a different way.
In that case, it was public properties. So, okay.
Either way, property.
Yeah, you're right. Still, I know.
Yeah.
I just wonder.
You know, and as far as the legal stuff, you gave her the name of one. There's another one I just learned of, which is... Hold on. Let me see if I can find it real quick. Just learned of it. We the PatriotsUSA.org. His name is Brian Festa. He was interviewed by Mike Adams of the Health Ranger, and he does a lot of defending of families that are, the kids are being taken by people, by like foster care and whatever, because of and situations where they're defending their rights. In this case, it was their right to raise their kids the way they want.
All right, well, you're going to have to shorten up because, again, when people listen to the recording, and we do get a lot of people listening to the recording, they're not going to hear you at all. And,
okay, well, then just let her know about that.
Well, what was the name of that site again?
Yeah, We the Patriots, USA.org.
We the Patriots, USA.org.
And And then, of course, there's Pacific Justice, which you're familiar with because they visited Dutchess. And they're also nonprofit defending Christian concerns. Also, the last thing I want to say is they may want to consider a pro bono, because if this is going to be considered criminal, if he does get charged with criminal, yes, he's going to need defense. And if he's not familiar, even familiar is very difficult, you know, he may want a pro bono lawyer.
All right. Thank you. Okay, we have nobody else in the queue. If anybody else wants to get into the queue, *6 and 1 if you're on a phone, and there should be a button if you're on an app or browser. Gerard, you got anything we could talk about? Well, oh, we got someone in the queue, so forget about it, Gerard. Okay, next person. It looks like Mark. What state are you in? Oh, we got Mickey Mighty Mouse or somebody. You're going to have to reboot because you're coming in like the... How would you explain that sound he's got going?
Chipmunk.
Chipmunk. You sound like a chipmunk. You're going to have to reboot your probably, you know, what would I say? Probably shut your app off and then come back on. Maybe that'll fix it. I don't know.
Yeah, Mark, your audio is all mixed up. You sound like a chipmunk and we can't understand what you're saying. I'm sorry. If you'll come back,
rebooting your app or whatever you're on. So, okay, well, nobody in the queue at the moment. All right, anybody, any of the leadership here have a question, a comment, or anything they want to share? It doesn't sound like it, so. Anyway, I don't have anything particular to talk about, but again, we'll go back to, let's see what we have here. Maybe we'll talk about the three quarters of a penny worth, you know. Let's see what salaries was like back then. Let's see. A choice apartment, 125th East 93rd Street between Park and Lexington. It's a Ritchie area. $125 for a three-bedroom apartment in the same building was for $165. I mean, you pay $15,000 a month these days for that. So, average rent per month, you know, when gold and silver was in play, average rent was $83.33. Okay, we'll try Mark again. Mark, you got the mic. Let's see how you sound now.
Is this better?
Well, good now. What state are you from?
Indiana.
Mark from Indiana. You got the mic. Go ahead.
Has anybody...
Hey, by the way, how did you fix that? You just shut down and came back on?
I just shut it down and went back to the meeting.
Okay, so that's good to know. We can advise others to do that. Okay. You just shut your browser down or whatever you came in on and then reopen that, right? You didn't have to reboot your computer or your...
No, but okay. I had my software on while I rebooted. So it must have worked.
Okay. Go ahead. What's your question, okay, comment, or whatever?
It's a simple question. Has anybody used Exodus 18:25 as a guideline to promote their county committees of safety? And it reads as follows. And Moses chose able-bodied men out of all Israel and made them heads over the people, rulers over thousands, rulers over hundreds, rulers over fifties, and rulers over tens.
Well, that's interesting because that plays a role to some degree on the dividing of really like the counties and stuff. But people that get together, well, let's read that again. What was that, Exodus?
18:25.
Let me just take a quick look at that because see exactly what that says again. Okay, I know you read it, but we'll try it again. And Moses chose able men out of all Israel and made them heads over the people, rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, rulers of tens. And again, that is pretty much how we are structured, building up through the counties, and the people should be involved in that, and that's what the purpose of the committees of safety is for. And there's no limit to the number of people, because you see, it's a right of government by consent to have that part of that process, to be involved with that. That's an unalienable right. You can't be limited, saying, oh, you can only have 200 people in it, and that's it. You can have, no, there is no limit. You can have 1,000 people in it if you want. Doesn't matter. The more hands, the better it is. Many hands make light work, and so the more people involved, and the better it is. But it does apply to some degree, I would agree.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you.
Okay, because I lost my mic for a while there.
We run Camera Hub to use, what is that up there? Some kind of camera or something, virtual camera.
What do you think?
Oh, maybe it's me.
I've been
clicking sent.
There you go, you got rid of it, so whatever it was. But go ahead, did you want to comment on that?
No, I just wanted to get my mic back. Oh. I've been clicking wildly.
Anyway, you know, using the Bible in order to establish things, of course, is good. People are free and independent to do whatever they want to run things as committees of safety. But we strongly suggest to follow the structure we put together. You know, we have some people who want to incorporate. Why become them? We don't want to do that. You know, and various different things that are off of what we've laid out. But, you know, again, people are free and independent, but we need to structure ourselves in the same way so we're very compatible and able to do business together, because in order to have government by consent, you have to be able to do business with the county next door and even across the state or whatever. Because you get involved in the election part of the process, particularly, you will go into counties, you know, going for your congressman or senator and so on.
Okay, thank you.
But anyway, Mark, you got any other questions or anything else?
No, I just wanted to see if anybody has ever tried this in the past.
It's not a bad idea. I mean, you could, you know, draft it up and use it. I don't see why you couldn't.
Okay.
Well, again, you know, it's a structure. That verse is really reflective of how things work in order to, you know, have a control. Again, it's how we are pretty much set up governmental-wise to some degree, and especially county-wise, you know. And you have different election districts. And so, again, things are broken up, you know, in that kind of a fashion. Thanks, Mark.
Okay, thank you.
All right, we'll take our next caller here. It looks like Troy, maybe?
Troy Holger.
Yeah, I hit the button for you, Gerard. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
First name, okay.
Hello? Actually, it's Elizabeth. I don't know why it keeps coming up as Troy.
Okay.
I have a question about going before court. And I have the common law handbook for jurors, sheriffs, and bailiffs and justices. And then I have the Uniform Commercial Code connection. Is there any others that you would recommend you would need to go before court, before a judge?
Well, yeah, we have. I'm putting it up on the screen. Are you able to see the screen? Are you on an app?
No, I'm on the phone.
Okay. If you go out to nationallibertyalliance.org and on our blue bar under the Welcome tab, highlight the Welcome, and you come down to Books by John Darash, and there's quite a few books here. We have Court Access in the Common Law book, and that's a pretty hefty book. It's 550 pages, 8.5 by 11 book, hardcover, only $39, $40, $39.95. But we also provide, under our Education Starts Here, we've got a lot of different free courses you can take. But we do have a law course in here. It's called Court Access in the Common Law course, just like the name of the book. And if you go under Education Starts Here, come down to Court Access in the Common Law course, and then to the right you'll see court access table of contents. Now, you may not be able to see that there, but if you click on that, you'll get that. Well, let me click on that just because the contents is also in the course. I think we have it listed out here. We do. Okay. If you click on that, you'll see what we cover. We have an introduction, which covers quite a bit. It talks about democracy versus republic, law and equity, American natural law republic, the 10 foundational self-governing truths, the sovereign citizen movement, the right to practice law, a list of lawful equity courts, so on.
Okay.
Then that's introduction. On chapter one, we have the essentials, which deals and covers the grand jury, Microsoft Word formatting for writing papers, law dictionaries, founding documents, founding quotes, U.S. Supreme Court decisions, U.S. codes, and codes could be applied, of course, against them, not against us. They don't have anything to do with us. We also have a glossary, footnotes. We have a lot of stuff. Chapter two is pleadings. Chapter three is causes of action. Chapter four, defenses. Chapter five, motions. Chapter six, memorandums of law. Chapter seven, the rules. 8, Petit Jury Handbook, 9, Recap, Additional Notes Ready for Trial, Note of Issue, Trial Notebook, Bill of Particulars, blah, 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 a lot of stuff.
Because I'm going to have to go before, like, a family court, going through, like, a divorce and everything, so it's going to be difficult trying to do everything on my own, although I do have an attorney.
Is there any way to have a... get together, maybe have a counsel to help you to get together to discuss how you can work this thing out, if that's what you need to do. I mean, of course, the first counseling should be to salvage your marriage. But if not, then at least come together to say, well, hey, why are we going to give all our money to lawyers? Because that's what you're going to be doing. He's going to be giving lawyers money to lawyers. You're going to be giving money to lawyers. It's just going to just absorb and soak up everything that you have. Sit down and what I would do if I had to go through something like that is I would sit down and write up the most righteous agreement that I can and be very fair, put it on the table, and see once what we can do. Because if not, we're going to be giving half of that to the lawyers, or maybe even more.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
So if you could solve this on your own, you can then thumb your nose at the court, because then there is no conflict to be get involved with. There's no, you know, arguments or anything to be made. We've already settled all that. It's on the paper. We've signed a contract. So it's a matter of just writing, filling out the forms, and going through a process of time. They have this game going on that they have to go through the process of time, you know, because they want the lawyers to make money. There's not going to be any lawyers making money on you because you're not going to use a lawyer. You go down to the court and you ask for a packet, a divorce packet, and then you get the packet and you can read through that. It'll give you a lot of information, and it also talks about coming into the court when there is no conflict or nothing to be argued about. So I would strongly suggest to try to get that conversation going. I don't know, but if you had to. You know, try to get a counselor, somebody to kind of help you, just the two of you, to work things out.
Okay. I had no clue you can go to the court and ask for a divorce packet.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The other thing is that divorce packet you can use, it gives you different options. And one of the things you could do is you had to make a battle without a lawyer. You can fill out all the papers. And it's mostly all forms, okay? You know, once you fill out all the forms, they really want to know your information, you know, what kind of property you have, your money, blah, blah, blah. They want to know everything they can about your assets and stuff. And then the next thing they do is they have a pretty good, to some degree, I got to admit that they do have somewhat of a reasonable, plan, you know, on how things work as far as dividing things if you can't figure it out. But, you know, it's going to be a difficult, hard time to go through, and it's a lot easier if you can say, let's compromise and cut out the lawyers and save money and let's see what we could do. But again, it's a matter of filling out forms and then establishing what your arguments would be if you had to make an argument that you would then go into the court to make your battle. Okay. And it is really simple, but you should take the course, Court Access in the Common Law, and everybody should take that course, because you know, sometime in life you're going to be dealing with the courts one thing or another. In civil cases, potentially a criminal case, hopefully not, but civil cases maybe, you might want to sue somebody, and why get a lawyer?
Okay. So it's access and common law handbook for jurors, sheriffs, and bailiffs.
Right. You know that we wrote also. We wrote those books. I mean, that's under, you'll find them under our welcome tab.
I got those already.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying you can find them here. But the thing is under our page here, we do have the book, Court Access in the Common Law. We have the book Government by Consent. They're very hefty, big, thick books, okay? A lot of information. Okay. But the course, okay, is $125. You know, people will pay thousands of dollars to learn due process and go to courts. But then they teach you a lot of BS anyway, you know, the civil law, dealing with statutes and different things. But anyway, that course is a 90-hour course, and it'll be there forever. It's got a lot of, it's got all the forms and different things, and we explain it all, you know, how to write a paper, you know, how to write the papers to go into court, you know, you have to have, you know, your index number or case number, whatever you want to call that, and then you have to have a summons, and you have to have your paper and then your memorandum, and so on, and then you have to understand due process and discovery, you know. Anyway, we lay all that out, and it's available to go in and out at forever. I mean, once you come into the course, you'll have access all the time to all that paperwork. You know, there's a form for everything.
So once you pay your $125, you have access to it all the time, forever.
All the time, forever. And anybody in the household can use it. I mean, you know, husband, wife, other family members, it doesn't matter. But you have that to go in. And you just have to make sure that you're signed in, and then you can join the course and get access anytime.
Okay, because I did become a member.
Okay, and again, you know, let me just open up the side here. It's you got the video recording, okay, and you can always come here to ask some questions if you have any questions, and then court access table of contents, and that's helpful to get you through. You know, when you're looking for something specific, you can run through that. So.
Okay. Whew. It's difficult to go through everything and not knowing where to start and who to talk to and attorneys. And I mean, it seems to me that my attorney's just, I don't know.
Well, in the courts, they have pro se office, okay? I mean, you know, here in New York, I think the pro se office, I think, is down New York City. And you can call them up, and you can get a lot of information from them, you can get a lot of paperwork on forms. But again, we put it all together for you if you want to take the course.
Okay. That's something I'll definitely look into because who knew? This is like a maze of stuff, and you got to. I mean, I'm still learning about the Uniform Commercial Code and how to write your, when you write your name, you sign it, and then you put without prejudice UCC 1-3.
Oh, no, you have to go through all that. You just have to open up a court of record. That means it's a common law court with a jury, and you know, so that's the beginning of that. And when you end up with your signature, you put in pro per, which is in your own person, in pro per with a comma, and you type your name, and then you sign above it. I mean, you don't have to go into the UCC stuff or anything. You're free and independent. Once you open a court of record, you're in a court of law. Now, that's a battle, by the way, because they keep pulling you back into the statutory court, you know, and you have to battle it all the way through. But that's about to change, I believe. It may take time to, you know, kind of work its way down into the state courts, but we have to get it into the federal courts, and that's where the battle is, to take back the federal courts. Then it's a slam dunk to take the state courts back because we use the federal courts to force them to be obedient to the law.
Okay.
I didn't want you to.
That's probably.
Okay, if you got anything else final, because we're past our time now, we're about ready to close down. You got a final question?
No, that was it, and I thank you. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Anyway, NationalLibertyAlliance.org, I think you said you mentioned you became a member, so got a lot of stuff up there, lots of education.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right.
Have a good evening.
You too. Okay, we've come to the end, so we're going to shut down. Good night, everybody. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday, 2 days before New Year's. Good night, everybody.